KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Did you read about the hiker who got rescued from Yakima's Goat Rock Wilderness over the weekend? A search and rescue crew found the man a day earlier. Both the hiker and the rescuers had to spend a cold, wet night on an exposed ridge until the helicopter could land the next day. Get this, until the helicopter could land with its front tires on the trail and back tires still in the air. Does a helicopter have tires? I guess it does. I imagine they were runners. But anyway, the helicopter's poised partly on the trail while it's helping this person. Now, on KOW, we do not want you to be that rescued hiker. With me now to help is Taylor Brew with Seattle Mountain Rescue and Sandeep Nan, owner of Miar Adventures, and he's volunteered with the Everett Mountain Rescue. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, let's help. In fact, you listening might help too. Your hiking mistake, that's somebody else's hiking lesson. So we are at 206-543-5869. 206-543-5869. Tell us about a time you were caught unprepared, what went wrong, what you learned, what you shan't ever do again. 206-543-5869. First, Sandeep, you've had your own experience with mountain rescue. What happened to you?
For my rescue or...
I don't know. I heard that there was maybe a friend of yours who fell. What was your brush with mountain rescue?
Yes, so that was my friend Myers McDonough. We used to be roommates and climbing buddies and part of Everett Mountain Rescue together. And so he was on a climb of West Ridge of Stewart with a friend, another fellow mountain rescue person, and Matt. And so when they were climbing up, it's a lot of route finding and a little bit of loose rock here and there. And because it's not very hard climbing, you don't put a lot of protection everywhere. Anyway, so to keep it short, he took a fall and took a bad tumble, and the last piece was a little bit far behind. He had serious concussion and got badly injured on his shoulder, and his climbing partner couldn't get to him because he fell a little bit far away and with the amount of rope and all that. And so they talked, and he wasn't responding properly, so they didn't have any way to communicate, no PRB, any kind of personal locating beacon or satellite messenger or anything. His partner Matt decided to come down, which is very, very hard to go down on a climbing route on your own, especially when you have to leave the rope there. It's almost impossible, but that was the best decision that time to save, to help with Miles' rescue and save his life. And so he came back and finally managed to get a signal when he was down there. And so he called.
A cell phone signal?
Cell phone signal, yes. So we got, because we were part of the mountain rescue, I got a page or a message on my phone. And so we all, of course, you know, it's Myers and our friend. And so we all went there immediately to the meeting place at Everett. They had already sent a helicopter by that time, because it's very high, around 9,000 feet where it happened, and the weather wasn't good. It was very windy, so the helicopter couldn't really get close to him. But they did see him maybe lying down on the snow, unconscious. So that was very bad news for us. So we wanted to go and start a rescue because we don't know if next day same thing may happen that we can't get to him.
Right.
So I really wanted to go and get something, maybe at least take it, because they were doing it as a day trip, fast and light and fast. So didn't really have sleeping bag or any of those other emergency BV items. So I wanted to go up there. But they were very reluctant, of course, for good reason, because it's a steep mountain. It's already night, going up on a steep mountain in the night. I had thankfully been there just two or three times that season itself before that and came down on that path. So I was very familiar with it. So two other climbing buddies and mountain rescue member, Kevin and Jonah, and three of us kind of made a team to go unofficially to start the rescue. And both of them were EMT. So we carried a lot of stuff with us, like sleeping bag, mat, first aid kits, stove, food.
Was he still unconscious when you got to him?
We got there. So 2 a.m. is when we started walking up on the trail. And by, I think, 7, 8 a.m., we were up at the top. And then we had to do rappel down to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, by that time, conscious, actually.
Okay.
And he was, So we.
What can we learn from that, Sandeep?
I would say the biggest lesson is carrying, especially on big mountains like that, like Stuart, and any time you're going deeper in the wilderness, having a PLB is like life-saving.
What's a PLB?
It's like a personal locating beacon.
A beacon, yeah. Beams your location.
Yeah, beams your location. And there are multiple out there, you know, that each have their pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
But that could have made it start like much earlier. It happened the day before at noon, and thankfully he survived the night. But, you know, it would have all started much earlier. Maybe the helicopter could have reached him earlier. We could have started an in-ground rescue much earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It was that. Okay. The second, in my opinion, would be just to add on that, even if we all want to, as a climbers, want to go light and fast, but having some kind of emergency BV and sleeping bag, or between a team of two or three people, especially when tackling a big peak like that.
It might not be a day trip after all,
it turns out.
Bring a sleeping bag.
It happens again and again on Stuart. So many times people think it would be a day trip, and they end up staying for overnight on Stuart.
Okay, stuff in a bag, personal locator beacon. Taylor, you've been climbing since you were 10. Have you had something go really wrong? You got a story?
I don't know if I have a good story like that. I mean, I've had a lot of different experiences in the mountains, and I've been pretty fortunate in that I've never actually been rescued. And I've had some late nights where I kind of come out to the trailhead at 4 or 5 a.m. the next day, but it's never been to the extreme where I had to call for a rescue.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, Sandeep's point about having some form of communication is huge.
Yeah.
I think that Matt, who was Miles' climbing partner, is a friend of mine. And when I climb with Matt, he always carries a PLB regardless of where we're going.
What's the cost of a PLB? How much does it cost? And is it heavy? Is it taking up space in your pack? Otherwise, anybody would clip that thing on their belt or something.
Yeah, so I mean, there's lots of different manufacturers of PLBs, and you know, they have different functionality. There's the Spot, there's the DeLorme, there's different varieties.
Uh-huh.
And you know, go to REI and you can figure out what's the best for you. Some of them, you know, can communicate two ways, where some are just sending an emergency signal to the military to get a rescue in place. And you know, they're pretty lightweight. They're no more than, you know, probably 6 or 8 ounces.
Oh.
And they're about the size of, you know, small first aid kit.
So. Okay. When we're taking your call, listener, your hiking mistake is somebody else's valuable lesson. So 206-543-5869. What did you do wrong? What did you learn? 543-5869. And we have a call from a KUOW listener, Christy Weber. Christy, you ran into some trouble hiking the Wonderland Trail around Mount Rainier?
I did. Yes.
Thanks for joining us. What happened?
Well, we had planned for a 9 to 10 day trip, and we were on day 3, and I was pounding my way down the trail into Carbon River, and I heard a loud snap and chose to ignore it and kept walking, and it turns out I actually had broken my foot.
You ignored that?
I did.
Wow.
I had spent a year planning this trip. It was kind of my baby. So I did not want anything to throw it off, but I got down to the campsite and actually made the mistake of taking my shoe and my sock off, and my foot immediately swelled to maybe 3 sizes.
A sock keeps a foot that wants to swell from swelling?
Well, I had a shoe on, so
yeah.
I mean, I don't think anything would have stopped it, but, and I wasn't going, I mean, after doing that, it was very clear I was not going anywhere on that foot. And I had 3 other women with me, and what we ended up doing, I think it was about 36 hours until 2 rangers showed up. And what we ended up doing is the next morning, 2 of the women hiked up to the next basically ranger cabin, and they tried to tell anybody they ran into what the situation was with little guarantee. I mean, these were other folks hiking the Wonderland, not sure where rangers were, who they were going to run into. And it just turned out that about 36 hours later, while we were having dinner and trying to determine, you know, what our next step was going to be, these 2 rangers come walking into our camp. And they didn't know my age. They didn't know how badly I was hurt. I mean, we had kind of failed to provide them probably with some information that would have been very helpful to them. But they brought crutches with them, and they gave me the choice and said, we can either crutch out until we meet the litter cart. I don't know if you're familiar with what a litter cart is, but it's a stretcher that basically is on one wheel in the middle. So you lay on it, and then there's 4 rangers that wheel you on the trail, basically.
Right, I can picture that.
Yeah, so I said, give me the crutches, and I crutched, I don't even know how long it was. It was a long time across the boulder field of that area of Rainier. And then somewhere in the middle of the night, we met the other rangers who had brought the litter cart in, and they put me on the litter cart for the rest of the way to the Carbon River Road that's now closed, where they were able to have ATVs that took me out. So,
well, so Christy, on top of everything you were dealing with, I don't think it's fair that you had to be called a litter cart, what you were being pulled around in. But what was the lesson you learned?
Sure. Well, it sounds funny, but I always carry painkillers with me now. Mm-hmm. You know, we were not in a situation, we had planned for a 9-day backpack trip. So we had lots of food, lots of gear. It was more of a question of how long do you stay at a campsite. We had everything we would have needed. However, we were contemplating, how do we get me off the mountain? Mm-hmm. And one of the ways, I was going to try to hike out of there. And so one thing I do is I definitely carry painkillers with me. I think that would have helped in any situation. We did have a spot tracker. So that was an option available to us. So a spot tracker is similar to what the other folks were talking about, where it's a beacon, mm-hmm. and I could have pushed the emergency button and had rescue know where we were. But it was one of those situations where it wasn't life-threatening, and so it was, you know, a continued discussion of, you know, when do you use such a device? Mm-hmm. And folks at home were following us, so they could see that for the last 36 hours, we hadn't moved on the trail. So everyone knew there was something wrong. The second thing is, you know, I'm an avid hiker, avid backpacker, but I took the same attitude before this that I think a lot of people do, that it's just going to be, I can go on a day hike and I'll be fine. I'll take some water, I'll take some food. And after that experience on a trail that can be pretty heavily populated and with all the gear, I don't go for a day hike without 10 essentials. I don't hike by myself anymore, actually. I think there are people that would be comfortable with that. But I think given my experience, having three other people there to help out was important to me. So I don't hike alone mm-hmm. anymore. And I think, you know, having the attitude now that anything can go wrong. Obviously, I didn't on day three anticipate, I mean, I almost needed surgery. That's how badly I broke my foot. Mm-hmm. I didn't anticipate that happening to me. So I think having a mindset that things can go wrong and it can be perfect weather. I mean, everything can be perfect conditions. And all it takes is one thing to happen and you're stuck on a mountain with potentially no one there to help you.
Christy Weber, I'm glad you're not still on the Wonderland Trail around Mount Rainier. Thank you so much for telling us your story and your lessons.
Yes. Thank you so much.
So some good advice so far. The beacon, the sleeping bag, the painkillers, the don't be alone, and we'll get to the 10 essentials. We're taking another call from Maverick in Seattle. Maverick, what's your story?
Well, good afternoon, Bill. I learned the true meaning of terror. I was hiking on the Robe River Trail out by Verlot, catching some trout, having a good time. Stayed a little bit past sunset, and that was a big mistake. When I tried to walk out, I walked up actually past the trail, wound up in a kind of a tree fall, and wound up losing my footing on some false ground. I fell about maybe 60 to 80 feet, kind of hard to estimate, but it took a long time. When I finally came to rest, I was wedged in between a couple of tree branches, with two twisted knees, two twisted ankles, two twisted elbows, and one twisted wrist. The 25-minute hike that it takes to get in there took me nearly 4 hours to get out because it was so dark. The only way I could make any progress was I had a lighter, and I found a little white label that was on my backpack, which I tore off and put in the palm of my hand, and I would flash the lighter using the white label as a reflector, and then I could see far enough ahead to take 8 steps at a time.
Okay, so I'm hearing flashlight / headlamp is another lesson to add to our list, Maverick.
Yeah, and maybe a bottle of bourbon in case you have to spend the night.
And a bottle of bourbon. Maverick, thank you. Glad you're here.
All right.
We're helping you not be that rescued hiker, and I'm talking with my guests in the studio, Taylor Brew and Sandeep Nan. Someone mentioned, Christy mentioned the 10 essentials. What are the 10 essentials? You have them memorized, or should you just Google 10 essentials?
I guess Google 10 essentials.
Okay. Did you learn anything? Any advice based on what you heard?
I thought one key point that the first caller mentioned, Christy, was that she was hesitant to call for a rescue. And I just would like to mention that, you know, in King County, Seattle Mountain Rescue is an all-volunteer organization. And so if you call for a rescue in King County, you're not going to get a bill for it. And I just want to mention that because I think that that's sometimes a deterrent for people. They're very hesitant to call for a rescue. And they'll wait until night falls, until, you know, the storm hits. And they'll be in a worse condition than if they would have called earlier on. So, I mean, there's a multitude of reasons not to call for a rescue. But
pride.
All of everything you can think.
Don't want to be a bother.
Exactly. But
call.
Just be aware that situations can get worse. They can escalate quickly, and it doesn't hurt.
What advice do you want to give, Sandeep?
Carry ten essentials. Mm-hmm. Will be so the for the especially the second person who called, like having a headlamp and bottle of bourbon may give comfort for temporarily, but it's not really going to help you with the cold.
That would be 11 essentials. So let's leave the bourbon aside yes. for a moment.
But I'm like saying like, yes, if you like having, again, that sleeping bag or extra clothing, extra food, you know, something to keep you warm, emergency BV, emergency blanket, a lot of these things we are very light these days, and we can carry them always with us. Some kind of first aid kit, and, you know, so I may be missing some of the essentials. But that, one very essential part is because not everyone is going to just go and buy PRB.
That's again the beacon, the personal locator beacon.
Which could be Spot or Dell-ROM or any of those, or it could be satellite phone or, you know, because they are a little bit pricey. I think they are worth the money though, $300, $400, $500, you know, so they vary, but if they can be life savior, and it can be so much comforting for your family members to know where you are,
yes.
what you are doing. But on the
charge the family members, have them help pay for it. If it's so comforting to them,
it's not just comfort though. There is safety.
Yes.
Too, right. But in any case, like even if you're going Tiger or Mount Si or any of these mountains close by, many times we don't, at the very least, leave a detailed plan with your family members and friends, where you are going, what is your plan, where your car will be parked. I mean, there are many templates available. I'm sure on Seattle Mountain Rescue, Everett Mountain Rescue, there is one, there is a template available. What time you are planning to come, where if you are camping overnight, where you will be camping. So everyone knows your plan so that they can actually, if you got lost, even if you don't have a beacon, they can at least know where to look for you.
That's great advice. Final call from Kristen in Bellevue. Kristen, thanks for calling. What's your story?
Well, my story is actually rather embarrassing, but my husband, it was quite a while ago before there was cell coverage in the Cascades, as well as there is now. And my husband went off climbing with some friends on Johannesburg and told the wives they were going to be home by Sunday night. Didn't get out till midday Monday, and everything was fine. It just took longer. But because we wives with babies at home thought they were going to be home earlier, we all panicked. And unfortunately, I had some connections that enabled me to get a helicopter up in the air first thing Monday morning at daylight, which landed in the parking lot to check their cars as the boys were hiking out, quite chagrined. And to the last caller, I'll say we did end up reimbursing for the helicopter only because we could and we were embarrassed, but not because they asked us to. But it's just really important for climbers to manage the expectations of the people back home. And if you think that you're studs and you're going to go out and you're going to do a hard climb and you're going to do it well and get out and everything's going to go fine, don't tell the people at home that that's what your timeline is, because we'll panic, and that's super important to not let happen.
Yes, good point, Kristen. Not that your husband's not a stud. No one's suggesting that, but yes. Communicate what the plan is.
Don't say anything.
Yeah. Kristen in Bellevue, thanks for that. Any final words on how not to be a rescued hiker, how to get out there and get over the obstacles of, I mean, it's daunting to be, now in order to go out, I have to be perfectly prepared. I've got to have everything on this list and think of everything. That could just keep some people at home, Taylor.
You know, one thing that I'll mention is that I think that there's a lot of value in going out with somebody more experienced than yourself to learn from. I've had mentors throughout my climbing career, and while I've still made mistakes, when I'm out with them, I still feel like I can leverage their experience to make better decisions. So even if you're going to hike Mount Si, go with somebody who's done it before.
someone who's more of a stud, if that's possible. Using Kristen's words, by the way, in case you just tuned in. Okay, lots of good advice for you. The beacon, the sleeping bag, the painkillers. Don't be alone. A headlamp, please. Make a plan, a detailed plan. Don't wait to call rescue, and go with somebody who's better at it than you are, more experienced than you are. And you can Google the 10 essentials. We've been talking with Taylor Brew of Seattle Mountain Rescue and Sandeep Nan, owner of Miar Adventures, who's also volunteered with Everett Mountain Rescue. So they know what they're talking about. Guys, thanks a lot for this. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
More of KUOW's The Record coming up.